Hello and welcome back to Two Pre-Sales and a Pond. This is episode 74. And I'm very pleased to welcome back again, of course, Mark McKinley as co-host. And today we have got Markception. We've got three Marks on the podcast, which is a pretty special moment. Mark Winey, it's a pleasure to have you here. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell everyone a bit about what you do?
Sure, thank you. My name is Mark Winey, and I've kind of been in pre-sales for a majority of my career. As far back as 1999 was my first pre-sales role. I've also had roles in outside sales and enablement, but the majority of my career has been either a principal sales engineer or team leader, working with some really great people and some really great technology. Lots of startups, and unfortunately with that comes lots of volatility, restructuring, mergers, acquisitions. So I've become an experienced job searcher. I just wanted to share some tips on how you can leverage those skills today to really turbocharge your job search.
Well, I think that's fantastic. You know, I think it's obviously not escaped our notice that in various news sources, lots of technology companies are thinning. I think that's the best way to put it. And so it's something which people are faced with, just like you say, you know, in the volatile world of startups, there's ups and downs more frequently than in larger enterprises sometimes. And so it's great to have you on to talk a little bit about how to use our pre-sales skills, those wonderful skills that we've built up over years, and apply that to the job search. I know I can already feel a system coming, a tool. I know Mr. McKinley, and by the way, we're going to have to go with Mr. McKinley, Mr. Green, and Mr. Winey, because otherwise
right.
Mark said that. But Mr. McKinley, you're a fan of tools, aren't you, for systems to put things in place?
I am indeed, yes. And I don't know what Mr. Winey is about to reveal to us. I do have a little bit from our conversation before we hit record. But yeah, I mean, I love things like Obsidian for personal knowledge management. I'm a bit of a productivity geek. I do like my sort of things to-do list manager and starting to use AI even over my own notes, etc. So yeah, I'm intrigued to what Mr. Winey is going to do with us.
Intrigued. Mr. Winey, take us away. What do you recommend? Well, what thoughts have you had?
Sure. I love Mr. McKinley's comment regarding AI, and that originally wasn't on my list. But in recent months, I've actually been using some AI tools to maybe make a more casual version of a cover letter or casual version of a networking letter, just to change the tone of something. Might save me a few hours here or there. Lots of good uses for AI that I could imagine, and there's lots of writing out there. So I won't spend time on that. What I'm going to spend time on is how do we leverage our core skills as sales engineers to help escalate our job search, to accelerate it. And I kind of break the conversation down into three areas. How do you approach a sale when you're a sales engineer? You qualify something. Then you do discovery session. Then there's some type of deal progression. So I'll talk along those three lines, and Mr. Green and McKinley feel free to jump in and ask any questions along the way. So from the qualification perspective, table stakes, everyone's always looking, is this the right role? Is this the right responsibility level for me? Is this the right industry? But I ask myself and others to go a little deeper, looking into the revenue and the growth and the market and learning about their position in the market and their competitors. And most people will go do Glassdoor reviews. I also go a bit deeper and I go into G2 because no matter how good the company looks and the culture looks, if the product has horrible reviews on G2 or in other areas, I might just avoid the opportunity altogether. And sometimes
I'm just going to jump in there.
Sure.
Yes, G2. Big fan of that. Researching places that companies aren't expecting you to look, I think, is fascinating. Like when you're trying to choose a piece of software, go and look at their feature requests, if you can, mm-hmm. their support site, to see what their existing customers are missing. Mr. McKinley.
Yeah, and one of the things I was just thinking about there, Mark, and again, we mentioned it even on a previous podcast, one of the things that I'm a big, big fan of is various sort of frameworks. So one of the things I was thinking about is before you get to this stage where you're doing your sort of due diligence on an organization, there's a tool or a framework that I love to use as part of my sort of annual personal review. And it's about a Japanese philosophy called your ikigai. Now, for the purposes of anybody wanting to look that up, it's I-K-I-G-A-I. And what it is it's a very simple but hugely insightful Venn diagram, which kind of gets you to go through what you love doing, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you get paid for. And as an exercise, it's a fantastic little thing for brainstorming and understanding where your mission, your passion, your profession, your vocation sits as these things overlap, which then allows you to move into this due diligence and research on a given organization. But it's a nice little tool, and I tend to have it on Refresh My Ikigai as part of my annual review process.
I love that. Love that, Mark McKinley. And my next point actually dovetails into that. I'm glad you shared that because I've seen that Venn diagram before. I just didn't know what the name was. So thank you for sharing that. And I wrote down the spelling I-K-I-G-A-I, and I will double check. And I think that dovetails nicely into my next point. Especially important if you consider switching industries and working with a new technology. Perhaps you've sold risk management your whole career and now you want to do fraud management or something a little bit to the left or the right. If you're switching to a new platform or new industry, in doing your research on G2 and using that philosophy you just mentioned, make sure as you look at it, it's a solution that you can see yourself being passionate about. Okay, that's more important for me because I'm a very demonstrative person. And, you know, if I could fake enthusiasm, maybe I'd be more on the dark side and outside sales. I don't know. But I am a technologist and a customer advocate. So I need to be passionate about what I'm selling. Also, with startups comes some risk. So I deeply go into the profiles of the executive team. Have they had good experience with successful exits before? Have they been there and done that? Are these people, based on their background, that I feel my career is safe in their hands? And that just comes from, you know, being bumped around at times and being in some very small startups and where someone was trying it the first time. So you live and you learn. Also, obviously, looking at the growth and the culture, which I'll get into in a moment. Mr. Green, did you have a few thoughts?
Well, yeah. So, you know, I really love this. So yesterday I was recording a podcast with John Hodgson. So go and look John up on LinkedIn. That's a good podcast as well. And we were talking about recruitment because he's a recruiter. And I love the fact that you're talking about this intentional approach. You know who you're going. You know who you're going to approach. Research that company. What are they actually like? I think a lot of people don't bother. I think they just read the job. Not even the whole job title. They just look at the job. Sorry, the job spec. They just read the job title, and go, yeah, I'll apply for that. Bam, off goes the a generic CV. What you're talking about is crafting your own future by intentionally going forwards into companies where you know that you'll succeed and you can bring value, and they'll provide value back to you as well by being the right sort of company that you like. And I wanted to take a moment to say it's refreshing to hear that approach, because I think a lot of people don't bother. And maybe those people should continue to not bother, because it sounds like they don't deserve the would wish success on everyone, ultimately.
Mark Green, to your point, and this is kind of a logistical tip, it doesn't have to do directly with any particular SE skill. Because it's so darn easy to apply with one click, I apply two ways. I get either a network or employee referral is best, but if I have to throw it over the fence, I make darn sure that I'm filtering for jobs that are less than 24 hours old. If they're not less than 24 hours old, I am so far in the pile, I might not even be seen. And I've actually tried that last year and seen my response rate go up significantly.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, Mark, any thoughts on that? Mark Green, yeah, Mark McKinley this time.
That's a really good point. And I remember, and this is, I'll need to clean up the language that was used in it, given the medium that we're in here. But I remember my first ever management role, and I was at the age of 26. And one evening, we were doing a big recruitment drive, actually, for early talent. And at that time, job advertising via the internet wasn't really the thing. And we put a big old advertisement in some of the broadsheets. And I got a huge response. And my boss came in one evening, and on the end of my desk was a massive pile of CVs. And he'd said to me, he said, is that the response rate? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. He said, well, what are you going to do with all of that? And I said, well, what can I do? He said, do you want a tip? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And he picked up half of the pile of CVs and he put them in the trash can. He said, you don't want to employ somebody that's unlucky, do you? And I remember thinking about it and just thinking, you know, I mean, I know he was partly joking, right? And there's far more sophistication in it these days. But in the HR systems, there's a ton of AI tools now that are parsing resumes, et cetera, and trying to profile the keywords for the skills matching to the actual role itself. And it's hard. You are fighting against an automated system with tools, AI tools, mm-hmm. to get past that first hurdle.
To that point, Mr. McKinley, another good use of AI, if you have a job that you really think is strategic that you want to go after, and really want to spend some time customizing your resume, you input your resume and you input the job description into one of the AI tools, and it'll either tweak your resume or give you a sample resume to spit out. But it gives you some guidance, you know, to get those keywords right and to think about sample accomplishments that might be similar to what you've done. So, yeah, absolutely, whenever possible.
So, thinking of the skills that pre-sales people have, they've obviously, I loved the way that you were lining it up as a qualification, discovery. What's next? Like presentation skills? Is that something that people forget to use? Because pre-sales people are pretty ace at that.
That is very, very important. And it leads to a great segue. I don't know how you're reading my mind here, Mark, but it's a great segue between qualification and discovery. And then, of course, the pitch. The last thing I usually mention in qualification is the culture, which you visit the career page and they've got their bullet points and their cute mission statement and all of that wonderful fluff, right, that we always see. But you need to absorb it and you need to internalize it, because not just what you say, but how you say it and how you present yourself from that initial first meeting might either align or cause them to disengage based on their culture and, you know, their corporate approach. So, and I'll go deeper into culture in a minute. In the next phase, in the discovery phase, coming prepared to that first interview with an internal recruiter or a hiring manager, always, always, always having your answers buttoned up for the key questions that they're always going to ask. Why this company? Lots of research, have your buttoned up answer. and why this role. Also have your buttoned-up answer to stay in the game. That's table stakes. But I like to ask deeper discovery questions, questions that are going to make them think. I want to know about the competition. I want them to tell me, you know, Mr. Employer, what are your differentiators? And why do you win? And when you don't win, why do you sometimes lose a deal? That's information that I'd like them to share to see how they fit. And then as I go deeper in the conversation, just like a discovery call with a client, I want them to prove it out and go deeper. So a minute ago, I mentioned culture. Now, if I understand the culture and the key cultural points, I can represent myself well. But I also want to understand what's real. And I turn the tables and I ask my own behavioral-based questions. So if Mark Green was my interviewer, I would say, Mr. Green, I agree with a lot of these cultural, you know, points on the website. And I was really attracted to point A and point B and, you know, transparency and accountability. They really resonate with me because X, Y, Z. But I'd like to know from you, Mr. Green, can you provide an example of something that happens in your company, but it's not likely to happen in other companies, and it's due to your unique culture? Okay, so that kind of lets me turn the table a little bit and let them prove out that their culture. And if the interviewer doesn't have a story ready, tip of their tongue, then guess what? It might just be words on a web page.
Yeah.
Words on a wall. So the good companies.
It's quite hard not to answer then. I felt like I was having to get a response ready, but I understand we're going through the theory rather than actually interviewing right live on the podcast. But yeah, no, I think it's really interesting to formulate some of those questions. You know, because back in the day, they said, make sure you've got a question to ask. And you're right. Table stakes questions are just, they're just so basic. And as a hiring manager, you see them happen. You see them coming and you see them happen. You're like, okay, fine, tick. But then if you do one where the person actually sees themselves in your company and cares about whether or not they're going to be able to bring the best of their talents and make it a success in that environment, well, hold on. This is something a bit more unique.
And I think we touched on it earlier. I can't remember whether it was when record was on or not, but really we're talking about a sales process here, right? And I guess at any of these points, whilst you're doing your discovery, you are trying to discover timelines. You're trying to discover who the key stakeholders are. You're trying to discover who the decision makers are as well. And what we do know, of course, is that you are going through a series of gatekeepers before you actually get to that. It's exactly the same as what you do when you're selling technology or services.
Yes.
It's a different product. It's yourself that's being sold here, right?
It really is. And you're going up against versions of yourself as well, right? So you're going up, you have to think about your competitors, not the product's competitors or the potential employer's competitors, but the other people in the interview process. Now, of course, you don't know them, but you know the industry, you know the job they're going for, you kind of know them. So if it's a job where you're going to need to be able to describe and deep dive those value assessments in a strategic way for a company, for a global company, anyone applying for that job is going to say that they're very good at that. Okay, so you shouldn't not say that, but you shouldn't have that as your unique selling point. You should perhaps come up with a different unique selling point, which might make that hiring manager think, hold on a minute, this is the next level of person.
Yeah, and this is the bit that I find quite fascinating by the whole process, if I'm honest. I mean, my background is procurement, and one of the things that I was taught very early in procurement was that innovation comes from out with. And there's a certain way of sort of categorizing different types of spend, and it's the same with jobs. You know, if you're sourcing jobs, what you're actually sourcing is outcomes. And therefore, do you as an organization know what those outcomes are? So when you publish a job spec, it's almost like an RFP. And an RFP being issued to the market is, I know what the solution is. I need something engineered to fit this solution. And oftentimes in the world that we live in now, many organizations perhaps don't know really what the solution is. They know what the outcome they want is. And therefore the job description that's given to HR, that's then given to recruiters, etc., may not be exactly what is required, right? There's a misinterpretation there, and it's narrowing the scope of the market too much. And people need to be able to sort of push in those boundaries and demonstrate beyond what's just stated.
That's a great, great point, Mark McKinley. Some of my next points actually reinforce what you just said, understanding the evaluation process and the outcomes. And you used a word, you mentioned RFP, and that's a great, great analogy. And this is something I've actually said in several interviewers. I'll say, Mr. Hiring Manager, Mr. Recruiter, I've read the job description. It's 2 pages, it's 3 pages. It's a Christmas list. That's the word I use, but essentially it's an RFP. These are all the things that you could conceivably want. But if you and I were in Starbucks and I handed you a Sharpie, what are the top 3 things you're looking for in an ideal candidate? Nice, simple, open question. It lets them talk. And sometimes they're going to answer with skills, and sometimes they're going to answer with personality attributes. Then you're going to absorb those answers and think of relatable stories to share later on in your interview before you're off the call. Another go-to question. I want to understand the evaluation process. So early in the call, I will ask, can you describe after today what other steps in the process happen and what stakeholders I'll be speaking with? I want to know if I'm in step 2 out of 6 or 2 out of 3. I note that from the very earliest meeting. And as I get into that pipeline and speak with each new stakeholder, that question I just mentioned, the top 3 things that you're looking for in a candidate, I ask that of each and every stakeholder because everyone gives me a different answer.
So you talk about stakeholders. I love this, and I am going to be brief because we could spend like 4 hours talking about stakeholder engagement. But in any job hiring process, there is an approach that you will take to the hiring manager. And we keep talking about the hiring manager the same way as vendors keep talking about the buyer. But it's not one person. It's a few people. And they want different things from you. So my approach would really recommend the creation of assets that can be sent to those people in advance, because I've been a recipient many times of added to a folder of CVs and said, this is the person that we're thinking of for this role. What do you think? And of course, my perspective on what I need from that person, and it might be very different to someone who's going to be collaborating with them or someone who will be working underneath them or above them. There's so many different types of requirement for this person from the perspective of those different stakeholders. If you just use the same approach for all of them, why are you doing your process a disservice by ignoring the fact they have different needs? Obviously, the hiring manager is the person that set the job spec. But when they say, hey, I'd like you to meet the team, just is they want to make sure you're going to get on with them. So why not send things in advance and say, hey, could you send this to your team? I know we've got a meeting next week. I thought if they can't all make it, they might appreciate this. And I don't do that.
That's a great point. That was Mark Green speaking, of course. That's a great point. And I've actually been doing it somewhat backwards, but I'm going to contemplate doing it the way you described. Sometimes I'll send a UVP or unique value proposition summary at the conclusion of the process, which I'll talk about in a moment. But a few minutes ago, Mark McKinley was talking about outcomes. And that's how we're taught to sell, right? In software, SaaS, or technology, is you don't sell a product or features, you sell value and outcomes. So another one of my go-to questions is, tell me what's going well, you know, about your sales process, your SE process, whatever. Tell me what can be improved, and sometimes dovetail that into what challenges can I help solve in the first 90 days? And what I'm trying to do with those questions is uncover the outcomes. To share the right stories, to position myself well. And I've gotten a lot of traction with these questions. Been told that they're a bit more thoughtful or a bit more strategic. And after all, isn't that what they're looking for?
Well, it really is. So before we get to the actionable insights or top tips to leave people with today, you mentioned closing. Of course, we can't do a deal without closing the deal. So tell us how we can apply pre-sale skills to that part.
Yeah, and that kind of begins to wrap up the discussion. As you get closer to closing and deal progression, one of my closing questions is, and you know, they may answer or they may not, but oftentimes they'll give me a little bit of insight. Can you tell me, have you enjoyed this conversation? And if you have, how do I compare with the alternatives to me? And are there any concerns that you think we should discuss before I get off the call? Or maybe what we call the sweeper question. What is the important question that I forgot to ask you today?
Yes,
I'm not. Sometimes they'll give you some insight. So as we think about closing, you send that thank you note, what you enjoyed about the call. That's all just good follow-up and, you know, account hygiene. Sometimes that's when I send my UVP. I did that to a recent opportunity and basically said, I believe I have a unique combination of skills. This is my UVP, with the left column being these unique skills and the right column being this is the value those skills add to your company. And they thought that that was really buttoned up and really appreciated. But I want to make sure the opportunities move. So whether you're using something like monday.com or actual software, or whether you're doing what I do in a Google Sheet or an Excel spreadsheet, I create my own little CRM where I rank the opportunities in terms of how hot they are. But you're going to capture all the stuff you think in a CRM, your contact name, your referral source, the company, the job title, the status. I actually created a dropdown to show where I am in that process. Am I at the recruiter screen, the hiring manager screen, final interview, panel presentation, verbal? Where am I? Where am I in the stage? What's the last step and the date of the last step? And what's the next step? That keeps me on point with follow-up and constantly top of mind. And then, of course, the logistical stuff, what the work location, salary, any other notes that I want to jot down in the margins. But after all, it is a pipeline to keep me, you know, focused on outreach and prompt me and keep me honest.
Well, of course, we're all honest because we're all pre-sales people. But yeah, so I love that. I think if we were to go around now and think about some actionable insights, things that people can do, based on what you were just saying, that little tracking of where you are in the process helps you also understand, you know, when the recruiter comes back and say, well, yes, we'll let you know. We're just doing this completely opaque thing and we're not going to message you for weeks, but we're going to assume that you're still in the process, and we're going to assume you're not looking at any other jobs, and if you are, well, maybe you're not for us. Firstly, let's just call a stop to that practice, please, world, because that's unfair, and you know, it's respect, and we need respect both ways. I think if I was to summarize the top tip, I would say think about the different stakeholders and the fact that hiring manager is trying to understand, if I hire this person, what will I need to train them in, and where could they just fly on their own and create great outcomes? If you help them understand that, using the pre-sale skills that you've got, you're a product, you're worth as much or more maybe than many software products that companies buy, and they've got a It's ARR, right? They've got to pay you every year. So you better be bringing that value every year. And if you can't describe that using pre-sale skills, maybe you're not pre-sales. Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a really good point, Mark. And I love the analogy of sort of just mirror imaging it, right? Because you are the product, you are the service that that has an ARR. And I think, therefore, tailoring your approach to suit that organization is very important. I think that going to a large organization, you know, you're going to be many degrees removed from the hiring manager because there's a series of gatekeepers. Some organizations, there'll be a screening recruiter that will then pass you on to a recruiter that will then pass you on to someone from the business that then may get you to an HR manager. So it's kind of difficult to break that process. You know, in sales, you know, I was always one to love to disrupt the buying process, to be looking different if you felt you were behind the eight ball on that one. But I think tailoring it and being able to track it with, as you described, Mark, or Mr. Winey, with your CRM. And I think that's important to stay organized, to understand your approach to any given organization and to tailor your approach to any given organization.
That is exactly where I was going when I was thinking about the takeaways. And I was actually typing some notes. I hope my keyboard was quiet enough. Along the lines of what you said, the takeaway for me is if you're in sales or sales engineering, you need to dust off your assets or templates that you use for discovery, your sales pitch, and your follow-up. Because there's a lot of useful, reusable information in there about the style, the value that you bring in strategic questions. For example, number one, asking strategic and open questions to uncover their pain and stakeholder management. Classic solution selling. Definitely leverage that in your job search anytime you're facing an interview. And your pitch, aligning that, as we mentioned, with the corporate values and culture and aligning that with their pain. And finally, how do you stand out amongst the noise? Don't just follow up. Provide content. I followed up one time and provided a UVP. They loved it. I followed up another time and provided them with two sales leads because I saw someone post on LinkedIn the exact problem that they solved, and he was a CEO. I'm like, look at this guy. You can fix his pain. So anything you can do above and beyond, hey, I'm just checking in. Where are we? Should I call you next week? Add value with each engagement.
Look at that. Well, masterclass from Mark and Mark, and I'm glad I was here as well. The self-deprecating English person here. We've got English Mark, Scottish Mark, and American Mark. I think it's wonderful. What a global podcast and a global audience.
It's a Mark trifecta.
It is. We need a logo. Right. Thank you so much for coming on. Mark Winey is fascinating to dive into the world of a structured approach. And if we think about it for a second, we should all think, why weren't we all doing this before? But hey, it's good to have someone as an inspiration. And I think you'll be an inspiration to many. Mark McKinley, of course, it's wonderful to have you on as ever. Looking forward to next time. I can't remember what we're doing next time, but hey, if anyone's listening, come and find out whatever that is. And I will wish you all an excellent rest of your week.
If we had time. If you'll excuse the pun, I really hope we hit the mark today.
Yes. A round of applause, which, of course, our microphones will cut out. But, I do appreciate a good dad joke. Nice. Safe travels, everybody. Speak soon. Cheers.
Bye. Bye.